Hello and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. This is your host, Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for joining us. This episode is brought to you by New Era. New Era is the official headwear provider of the MLB, NFL, and NBA. If you love to rock New Era caps as much as I do, then you don't want to miss this opportunity to wear what the players wear and get 15% off when you go to neweracap.com/AOTC and use code AOTC, all lowercase, at checkout. That's 15% off your order using promo code AOTC. On today's show, we have on Scott Steltz, head baseball coach and athletic director at Chatham Central High School in New York State. Scott is coming off back-to-back state championships in Class C in New York State. He is three-time ABCA Regional High School Coach of the Year, a 15-plus year member of the ABCA, and he selects the ABCA Region 1 High School All-Americans for Northeastern States. So on the show, we discuss how he turned the program from a 500 ball club expectation to competing for state championships. We go over how he adjusts practice and development for multi-sport players and how they continue to get better as the season goes on. You're going to love this episode with Scott Steltz. Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to this.
Definitely. So I reached out a couple weeks ago, and again, I've basically, like, the last probably month of episodes, it's all been teams that have won the last game. And so I'm so thankful to, I don't know you personally yet, and so I'm so thankful to have been able to connect with you and you be so gracious to come on and share, you know, pretty much everything besides your signs. So, but I do want to ask, you know, what was last year's team like? What separated them? What were they exceptional at? Because again, you know, you win the last game of the year. It's a successful season, and there's a lot of things that have to go your way. So just kind of talk to us a little bit about that team, what separated them and some of their intangibles.
Well, we were fortunate. We had a lot of guys returning from the previous year that had won the state. So we'd been there, you know, we had a good feeling of what it took to get there. And then going back, obviously we could be a little more relaxed because the majority of our players had been through it, as well as our coaching staff. But the team, I would say, you know, first off, they were teammates. You know, they hung out on and off the field. They were great in our school, our community, with our youth. We actually got a late start to the season because for the first time in our school history, they came up one game short of making the state tournament in basketball. So honestly, sometimes I think that actually helps. I know this is going to sound odd, but sometimes the less practice you do sometimes is a little better. You know, you can almost burn yourself out by the end of the season. Mm-hmm. So we came off of basketball and we kind of backed off them in the beginning, you know, because we knew they were exhausted mentally and physically. A couple of my guys were pretty banged up from basketball, had some minor injuries. So we really just kind of backed off of them. You know, we still worked, but we didn't push at that point of the season. And they were just, I don't know, they embraced the challenge of trying to go back to back. You know, we didn't talk about it after day one. We don't talk about winning after our first week of practice. We just talk about taking care of our, you know, details and attention to detail and our schoolwork and family stuff. And they did a great job of that. The one thing I would say is both last year and the year before, they owned their mistakes. That's the one thing that always stood out.
Like,
you never got a confrontation, you know, when you were trying to correct somebody or help them grow. So that was probably one of the bigger things that really helped us.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, and I love some of the things that you talked about. You talked about them being good teammates. Obviously they were close. They had been there before. So let's rewind a little bit even more, because I didn't know you were back-to-back state champs. So what was really, so they had already been there, so they knew the expectations, they knew the routines. What was different about the year before them and when they hadn't won it, won it the previous year?
Well, there wasn't the expectations, you know, from everyone. It was all new and exciting. So honestly, you know, I like the underdog mentality. I think our guys embrace that as well. So that year we were a little more of the underdog mentality. where last year we went in as a favorites. So honestly, throughout the year, we had a couple talks during practices or games about just getting back to having fun. We'd kind of go watch our little leaguers play, and we'd involve them in our practices. Just kind of remind them, like, we can't guarantee that we're going to win the state championship, but we always are responsible for how much fun we have and what we put into it. And, you know, I think every kid, every human needs reminders of that. And they just bought into it. I mean, and, you know, they'd get a little sidetracked because of the pressure they were putting on themselves. But at the end of the year, you can't guarantee you're going to win that. So I just didn't want them to go through the whole year as skilled as we were. And if we did come up short, not to have enjoyed their season. So we constantly just look for ways to make it fun and have fun.
Oh, no doubt. No, I love that. So let's get into, you know, so you're back-to-back state champs. And, you know, obviously you're up north. And so I don't know when you guys get your guys. And so I'm sure, like, in the back of their minds, they're like, oh, shoot, now we have the expectations of doing it again after 2 years in a row. Has there been any conversations like that you guys have had with them?
For going forward into this year?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Very few. We graduated. Now we've basically graduated almost everybody from those two teams. I think we have about four remaining guys that, you know, four or five that played last year, a great deal that have some experience. But the conversation have come up, same thing. I mean, it's hard enough to win one, then you talk about two, and now people want three.
Right.
You know, it's almost become kind of humorous to mean a couple of guys, you know, like, when is the expectation going to let up? And, you know,
sure.
We just enjoy it. I mean, like I tell them all the time, it's a privilege to have people think of you like that, you know, like, mm-hmm. When I got here, we weren't very good, and the expectation would be to try and be 500. You know, so now having that expectation, that's a real privilege.
So. Oh, very cool. And so, when do you officially start working with your guys during the school year?
So New York State doesn't have too many rules about that. You could hold what's called an open gym, and anyone can come.
Okay.
You could do those whenever you want throughout the year. We will probably start in late January or February once a week for our pitchers and catchers. I don't really push them too much. We're a very small school, so three sport athletes are very important to our district. Mm-hmm. So like last night I was watching some of our guys play basketball. A lot of them play football. I would say 2 years ago, 11 of our 13 kids were three sport athletes, and last year it was probably 10 of them.
Okay.
You know, of the graduating classes. So I mean that's a lot for them, and to put more on their plate, I think it takes away from being a friend and being a family member. Mm-hmm. And I just think like we can get more out of them in less time than a lot out of them over a lot of time.
Sure, no doubt. And so you start working with them in January. You said a lot of them are three sport athletes, so they're in basketball. How do you work around their schedule to be able to provide, you know, instruction and arm health while they're playing other sports?
Well, you know, we give them guidelines. We give them a little, like a long toss program if they want it. Also, you know, some of them are training. Don't get me wrong. Some of them are going to like facilities and training, during the week. For our kids that don't play a sport in the winter, a lot of those guys are training on their own. But I truly feel like the more voices you can get, the better you can be, right? As long as they're giving you the right information. And I'm not arrogant enough to think like I know more than the next guy. So I constantly, like some of my players are home right now for Christmas break, and I'm already harassing them for, did you come up with any great drills that we can implement, you know? We don't really force them into anything. We kind of just, as long as they're in the weight room or they're throwing a ball or swinging a bat and they're doing something, that's good. That's good for us. And then, but when we get into preseason, we do get after it, you know, like we really tighten it up until the games start. So, and that's a fun time for everybody, you know, because they're not burnt out from getting up early and before school and working out and you know, all that. So it's on their own schedule. They get to work their side jobs. Some of them do that. So it's definitely, I know it's probably a little different than most coaches do it, but I've found over time that it's just better to have them ready to go when we're hitting sectionals than tired of playing.
Sure. No doubt. So, you know, with that, let's talk a little bit about, you know, you mentioned that when you got the job there, when was that?
Oh, 1990, the fall of 97, 90.
Okay.
Yeah, the winter
so,
of 97.
So you've been there, you know, one or two
years.
I've
been here a long time.
And you said the expectations were, you know, fairly low. So how did you buck that trend and how did you get them to believe that they could be more than that? And what were your first steps in that?
You know, like any young coach, I thought I'd just come in and tell them and they would just say how high and how fast and how far do I jump and
sure.
run. So it took me a few years to figure that out. And then from there, it was just every, you know, a lot of self-reflection. You know, I do like a weekly kind of little, now it's in my phone, but I used to keep notes of what I did well, what I need to improve, what should I stop altogether. And it'd be... I wish I had all those things still available to me because I'd love to see what I was saying to myself the first few years. But a lot of trial and error. And, you know, honestly, the one I'm sure you can attest to it, but the one great thing about the baseball is the community. Like the coaching community is just amazing. You can ask any coach and they are going to help you, you know, and you don't always get that in other sports. Like you said, everything but signs. You give everybody everything except their signs. So just, you know, reaching out to people, kind of emulating some people that came before me and lots of conversations with the guys around me. I was always raised that you can learn something from everyone and it's better to be the dumbest guy in the room than the smartest. So
sure.
Try to get in rooms with better, bigger baseball brains.
Sure. No doubt. And so you went back and was there ever a turning point that you saw that you were like, okay, we're finally getting this ball rolling in the right direction? Like, is there a point that you really remember that?
Yeah, I would say about 5 or 6 years in, we started almost, there was a bunch of young teachers and coaches in the district. And I also became the athletic director, so I even had more input. But we started to work together instead of pull the kids away from each other. And then there was like a culture shift as far as athletics went. And we became much more competitive in everything across the board. And once you get kids that like to compete, they'll compete. You know, you can throw out a kickball and they'll compete. And I think that was it, just getting them all to understand that we're all in this together and get the community back behind us. And the coaching support around here was fantastic. And I think that's what really changed. I can't say it was just something I did. I think it was definitely a group effort, even, you know, I'm blessed. Most of our administrators, as far as in the high school, have been sports people, and they've been fantastic and super supportive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. I bet. Now, how big? So you talked about the small community. What are we talking about class size wise?
Well, when I got here, it was about 135, and now it is about, I would say 65 is the average for a class.
Oh, wow. Okay. So
yes,
really small then. Okay.
Yeah. We're outside the city a couple hours and it's become a destination for people from the city for second homes. And so the taxes have gone up and not as easy to live here as it used to be. So yeah, our class size has definitely diminished.
Yeah. And you see, like, I think you guys are what, class C? So
yes.
I don't know how that translates to each, you know, state and divisions. And so I was curious about that. So you probably have very few pitcher onlys and you've got guys that play just literally everywhere.
I don't think we have a pitcher only.
Okay.
Yes. And yeah, you know what? Everyone plays multiple positions, whether they like to or not sometimes.
Sure.
But I believe that makes them a better baseball player too. I was going to talk to about it later, but you know, some of our drills is you just jump in and you don't play your position, but you still have to execute the play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so my lefty first baseman's at third, or he's behind the plate. Actually, my catcher for the last 3 years was left-handed.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And you know, the first couple times you get you got a lefty catcher, and then I'm like, just wait, and then he throws one of their guys out, and they're like, oh, you got a good catcher, you know,
that's awesome.
Who happens to be left-handed. So sure. You know, we give them, and I think But I think that also helps kids buy in, though. Like, they know they're not pigeonholed into one position.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, like my lefty, he ended up at first base because of an injury to finish out the season. But he was my catcher for 3 years, and he was one of the best in the league.
Yeah, that's
interesting.
And,
you know, most coaches, would, because of the stigma, wouldn't even put him back there.
Did they catch before they got to you?
He had some catching experience, yeah. And he loved it. He loved the pitch calling and all that stuff. I mean, he was fantastic back there.
Sure.
I still think we lost a couple calls just because of the way it looked getting framed on the outside corner. But
sure.
The umpires say no.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got a couple lefties who like to catch bullpens, and I'm like, it looks way different. They love to, like, they love to catch bullpens, or they even have their own lefty catcher's mitts that they bring to practice asking to catch bullpens. It's really funny.
That's great.
I'm like, it does, you know, when you watch baseball enough, it's like, it is almost like an optical illusion. It's like a mirrored video that you're like, oh, that doesn't look quite right. It's like Mike Trout hitting left-handed.
Yeah, the first couple pitches of every game, I'm like,
Yeah, that's funny. Oh, I love that. So, but let's talk a little bit about, you know, like the culture. So you talked, it's small town, and I'm sure they're around each other all the time, but like, how are you creating a culture of, you know, you want to be like good teammates and close, and you've mentioned that several times, but also on the competitive side as well. So just give us a peek inside, you know, what you're doing to create culture on a daily basis.
You know, I think we have strong standards and goals, you know, and we hold them to it. And it used to be, you know, when you're a younger coach, you kind of look the other way once in a while. And I learned that even though it's more uncomfortable, once you set a standard, everyone has to be held to it, including us, right? You know, so if it's, you have to be on time, we have to be on time, and you can't look the other way. So we have some standards, and then we have goals. And to me, a goal is something we try to meet, but if we don't, we just try again the other day. Where if we don't meet a standard in our system, we call it encouragement. There's going to be some encouragement. We don't have discipline, but we will encourage you to do it a little better, whether it's some lunges for your teammates or, you know, a jog for yourself or whatever. We don't beat anybody up. I think they're all young men and they're learning, you know, how to navigate life. And I honestly think COVID made that a little more challenging for them. They missed a year of social development. But coming out of that, we just kind of decided we were going to hold everybody to the standards right across the board. And it's definitely paid dividends. I will say I'm blessed. My two assistant coaches, like, they don't look past them either. You know, they're way nicer than I am, but if something goes wrong, you know, they're going to address it. It's not going to get overlooked, and I'll get them next time. So I think the beginning of the year that is tough as a coach, and probably as a player, but it pays huge dividends in the end. So I can give you an example.
Sure, please do. I'd love to hear.
Yeah, we were heading to the regional games up. New York's a big state, but we're going 4 hours north almost of Canada. And our AD set it up, and our school set up so we could stay overnight because we had an earlier game. So we got a hotel, and we went to get on the bus to go take batting practice. And from batting practice, we were going right to the field. And my right fielder wasn't on the bus. We just pulled out. And he got to the field. He found himself, you know, my players were way more worried than I was. I knew he'd be resilient and figure it out. But he found a way to the field a couple minutes late. And we let him sweat it out for a while. And then we put our arm around him. And I bet he won't be late this year. And then the following weekend, we're headed to the States and we're leaving from the school. And my second baseman, who had a habit of being late a little more than others, or at least being very close, he was running late. And I have no idea. I know he got pulled over trying to get here. He was so worried about our standard. He knew we were going to leave him. But I said to, you know, some of the guys, that reflects on that we hold you accountable. And then we talked to him maybe about not speeding, maybe just getting up earlier. And, you know, make your own adjustment. Don't. You know, he was very fortunate because he was coming in pretty hot, but that'd be an example of us just, you know, holding the kids to the standard. And we don't have a ton, you know, we expect you to be a teammate, work hard in the classroom, be respectful on and off the field and in the community, and just make good decisions. That's really that. That's it.
What are your like standards, expectations, rules? I mean, it's I'm sure it's something that you define and they know, but kind of walk us through what those are for you.
We don't like literally those are our standards. Be on time, give a good effort, be a good teammate, do your best in the classroom, make eye contact, shake hands with people, you know, things that'll treat them well in life. They'll have some value to them. And then, you know, we don't really have rules because if you uphold our standards, we don't really need too many rules. We have goals, you know, certain things like, you know, best effort in every drill. You know, you can step out and take a breath if you need to or reset your mind. But when you're in that drill, it's time to compete and it's time to focus. And then that's really a most of our standards and goals. I think the simpler you keep it, the easier it is for them to meet them. The more you tell them, the more things they've got to remember, you know? I mean, we ask them to play with energy and not emotion. We ask them to be selfless. Those are kind of like our buzzwords, selfless and relentless. We love adversity. That's one of our big things. And I think that really plays big for us. You know, we hit some adversity in and out of season and in the sectional and state run, and everyone else is panicking and pacing back and forth. And my guys in the dugout are like, this is right where we want to be. You know, we love this. Let's go. And it's really cool when you're in the biggest moment and the team's coaching themselves. I'll give you a quick example. 2 years ago in the state championship, I have a shortstop and a pitcher for me. So one of my aces was on the mound and he hit his pitch limit and we got bases loaded. We're up 6-4, two outs in the bottom of the seventh, and the kid coming up's got two doubles and two walks and my pitcher hits his limit. So I got to bring in he was a sophomore at the time. So I got to bring him in to close out the game. And you know, that's a huge spot. And I'm walking as slow as I can. My assistant goes, what are you going to say? And I was like, I don't know, you know. So I'm walking as slow as I can. I get out the mound and I take the ball from one of my studs and I go to hand it to Tate. And he just takes the ball. He says, give me the ball, coach. This game's over. Like, I expected such a different, you know, less composure, nervousness. And he went out and he struck the kid out on four pitches. You know, and like I got back to the dugout and my coach said, what'd you say? I said, nothing. I just got out of the way. And I said, I'll save my speech for next year. But like, I think that came and partly from how he's raised and who he is, but also from like our team mentality of we love these moments, mm-hmm. you know? And I mean, he absolutely loved it.
No doubt. No, that's really neat. I love that he took ownership of it and you just, you know, you've trained them enough to where you feel like, hey, now you're in charge, man. Like, we've done this.
Exactly.
Hay's in the barn, as they say.
You're 100% right, but you don't expect that in that moment, you know? I think, honestly, I think I was probably more nervous than he was.
I talked to our players about this the other day, and I said, I've never, like, as a player, I really never got all that nervous. Like, there were nerves, but I'm much more nervous as a coach, and
absolutely.
I have two boys, and now I'm, like, really nervous as a dad, mm-hmm. because we have very little control over the whole situation.
Yeah,
so
you're 100% right.
But they were like astounded by that. They were like, really? Like, you really? I'm like, cause I can't control anything. So I want you guys to do well. But I said, I'm not going to throw a pitch all season. I said, I'm not going to step in the batter's box at all season. So it is nervous. It's a good nervous energy of wanting you guys to do well, but they were.
And then if you ever look up in the stands and see the looks on your parents' faces, the nerve they got, I don't know how they survive up there.
Yeah.
My wife was told that she walked a marathon during our sectional game. Cause we were trailing the whole time. Getting one hit, and apparently she just walked back and forth pacing so much that she completed a marathon.
Oh, man. Well, tell us about that. Like, how did you guys come back and win that game?
So that game, we were down 2-1 in the seventh, bottom of the seventh, with two outs. No, we were down 2-1. We tied it up with one out, got a guy on, stole second with two outs, and my nine hitter was up, and it was a two hitter at this point. And him, the runner, neither one of them felt any pressure and just took an outside fastball where he was looking, just flipped it to right and won the game. And then in the States, we were down in the fifth by a run this year.
Wow, okay.
And same thing. Like, I think we ended up winning 12-6. You know, like, they like it. And I think part of that is us preaching that all the time.
Sure.
But you can't really always recreate that. You know, you can't put them in that situation. So the best you can do is probably put it in their mind. But a lot of it comes from them just buying in. You know, like, when you have athletes that buy in, boy, coaching's pretty easy.
Right. Well, and, you know, you mentioned having multiple sports. They had just come off, you know, going to the state tournament or a state championship in basketball. And, you know, I worked for a coach. His name is Bill Blankenship. He's a Oklahoma Hall of Famer. Awesome, awesome guy.
Yeah.
And we won a state championship. And, like, getting off the bus or, like, later, we had a couple football players that played. And he was like, I'd love to see that because success is contagious. And I was
you're right.
You know, and so I'd always like, so I've started, and it's interesting too, because you start to see, you know, you start to see when people have success, they have belief, and when they have belief, that breeds confidence. Confidence obviously can put you through the roof, but it's like, I'll start going to other places to kind of see, and there's always, especially smaller schools, there's always like sections. It's even boys and girls sports. Like, there's years where there's several trophies. And then there's a couple years where there's not, but it's almost always like grouped together. So it's so interesting.
Yes, you're right. We saw that with a lot of our programs here as well. We've had some good football programs and it went on forever. But then all of a sudden the expectation became, oh, we're just going to win. The players and the parents didn't realize the work that those groups had put in. So then we fell off, then we started working again and it comes back. But you're right. It does breed itself. Right. Just takes care of itself a lot.
Right. Exactly. Well, let's go ahead. So you guys, you know, you've got multiple sport guys and, you know, you're going through a lot of different fall. They're probably playing football, other sports, and then you get them in January. So kind of walk us through, when you really do get a full team, what you guys are doing and then how you manage. Cause let's say you start, there's several guys that are still in basketball. And what are you guys really focusing on earlier in the season? And then how do you win that time? And what have you felt like as you, cause you know, you talked a couple of times about, you know, you want to do less, but do it better. You want to do it better, but you know, taking not as much time, but what does kind of your preseason structure look like?
It's weather dependent up here, you know, if right, we're inside, we're going to get a lot of reps swinging, a lot of live arm off the coaches. We'll have three L screens in a cage, so they're just rotating through. And then we'll do a lot of bullpens. And then when we get outside is when we kind of try and implement our defenses. We get a lot of ground ball reps and we probably get less swings, but we get more important swings, whether we shorten the distance and throw with more velo. We make it more game-like, you know what I mean? We mix pitches. After day two of swinging, almost every round is mixed. So they don't, some rounds they know it's, hey, it's just fast curve or it's fast change. And then some rounds they don't know. And I do think that really helps them learn to, one, get comfortable in those situations. So when it's 0-2 and they know there's a curveball come, but they haven't seen one, well, they've been seeing them for 3 weeks. You know, even in BP, game day BP, they're seeing breaking balls. Now, we're getting up there in years, so our breaking ball is not sharp, but it's still spinning, and it helps them recognize that.
Sure.
We don't have a lot of bells and whistles here, but you know, we don't have the fancy machines that a lot of the guys on your podcast talk about. Jealous of, but we just do our best. We try to not have people standing around. We have some days we have the music blaring, whether it's to make them focus or to just change the, you know, the mood in the gym. It depends how long into the season we are. You know, some years we're, our first couple games are canceled and we don't even get on a field until like the end of the first week of April or the second week. And we haven't even been outside. There's been multiple years where I've played 4 games before I've practiced outside.
Wow.
So that, you know, is a challenge, but at the same time, everybody's facing that challenge. So as long as we feel like we're doing it as good or better, we should be prepared.
So. Right. Yeah, no, I really like that. And so let's say basketball season ends, what date is that? And then when do you guys have your first game? Like, what's the gap between the two?
So basketball, usually we compete. So we're usually into the last week of February, first week of March. And then baseball will always start on the second Monday of March. And then the season, our scrimmage will be the last week of March. And then the season usually starts either the last day of March or the first day of April. So there's only anywhere from 15 to 20 days, you know, between when we get them and we start.
Okay. So there is a little bit of a break here. We start 1st of March, and then the basketball state tournament is like the second week of March. So there, there's been several times that like we go on spring break trips and basketball guys are getting done competing in the state tournament and hopping on the bus and leaving. And so it's like, I don't know why we do that. It's just, you know, one of those things that it's like, if I was in charge, I would change it.
Yeah, but sometimes the basketball and football rule the world in high school sports. So
right, yeah, no, it's true. So with that, like, how many games a week are you guys playing? That'll lead me to a couple more questions. But how many games a week are you guys playing?
We usually play 2 to 3 league games, and then we'll play 1 or 2 non-league games.
Okay. Most days.
Yeah, we max out at 20 for the season.
Okay.
You can have scrimmages. You can scrimmage in season. So occasionally, like over the, we have an April break. Mm-hmm. We'll find, if we can't find enough games, we'll find a scrimmage. This year we're going to go out to a Doubleday Field in Cooperstown and scrimmage one of my buddy's teams.
Yeah.
And we'll do that as a scrimmage for the main purpose so that everyone can play. Right. Mm-hmm. Because if you make it a game, we were out there 1 year and we were playing a game and it was the end of the season and it was for the league championship. And we won 4-3 on a walk-off, and I looked in the dugout, and I got 3 kids heartbroken that they were in Doubleday Field and never stepped on it. Mm-hmm. And I just said to myself, I can't do that again. So we switched it to a scrimmage, and honestly, it makes it a lot more fun for everybody because your starting pitcher is not worried. He's only going to go an inning or two. As a coach, you're just there to, you know, teach, but to have fun mainly. And you're in the greatest part where baseball ever has been played, so.
Yeah, that's
cool. Walking around the town for the kids and going to the hall is fantastic. So,
yeah, I've actually never been up there. So, I've been to New York. So, we went to one of the conventions in Connecticut. I can't remember which one. The
Mohegan Sun.
Yeah, that's what it was. So, we flew into New York and we had some Italian and then headed out. The weather was terrible. And, but my wife and I, for our 10-year anniversary, we're going to be in New York City for 7 days after Christmas. So, so I'm excited to get up there. Yeah, I will be, you know, toe to toe and shoulder to shoulder with every person going up there. But I'm excited to get up there. I'd love to see outside of New York because I'm sure New York City is vastly different than most parts of New York.
Yeah, we're in the country, so we're about 2 hours, 15 minutes north of the city.
Okay,
but it is completely different than what you'll find in the city.
It's
beautiful in its own right. They both have great characteristics about them. But yeah, look me up if you're up this way.
Well, cool. Yeah, for sure. So, you know, with that, so one of the things that I struggle with too, because, you know, we're a 5A school, which is a second largest classification, but we also have multiple sport athletes, which is why, you know, I asked you about arms and how to get those guys ready. But we have maybe 1 or 2 POs as well. And so a lot of our guys, like, one of our best pitchers is, you know, the shortstop, and our second best pitcher is another, they all play multiple positions, right? Almost all of them. And so really trying to like be aware of the amount of throws that they're taking. And so I'd love to hear, you know, with you guys, cause we play like 1 week this year, it's usually like 4 games, sometimes 5, 1 game this year, or 1 week this year, we're playing 6 games. And so just trying to like be aware of all of those things. Because our season is it's 2 months. We play 37 games and then we have regionals and state. And so, you know, with that, just being aware of, you know, we want to win, but we also want to get better as the season goes along. So being able to pick our spots to limit guys and just, I would love to hear how you navigate arm health and getting guys better as they go along rather than, you know, winning for the now. And, you know, there are some programs that throw their guys 120 pitches in the first week. And it's like, man, like I don't know what they do to ramp up for that, but that's, you know, that's a lot. And I would love to hear how you navigate that, because it sounds like our seasons are somewhat similar. Ours is a little longer and yours starts a little later, but it's a similar path, if that makes sense. So what's your advice on how to navigate that?
You know, we play it. I mean, there's multiple things that go into it, but we try to teach them that we're going to trust them on their arm. And that being said, you know, when you have the guy that's a first year guy, or, you know, his mentality is like just a straight bulldog, like we obviously have to police them more. But we also explain, if you want to pitch at the next level, you have to take care of your arm, because when you get there, no one's taking care of it for you. So we have what's called like green, yellow, red. So when we go to practice, they can just say, hey, coach, I'm a yellow. So yellow means they'll throw lightly, go through some mechanic stuff, but they won't stretch it out. If they're a red, they'll literally just go through some light close throws, some probably dry mechanics, and their band workout. And then if they're green, they can go out and just let it eat. But then when we get into drills, you know, our next day's pitcher, like it's either a shortstop, you know how it is, it's always somebody, we'll limit their throw. So if they're playing the next day, like if they're on the mound the next day, they're probably going to be limited to about 8 to 10 max effort throws from their position. If they're playing in 2 days, like because the practices are staggered, they're at 20. But they can also say, hey, coach, I'm a yellow today and I'm on the bump tomorrow. And they will literally stretch and just feed us balls while we're doing drills.
Okay.
And for the most part, that's worked out. I hate saying this all the time, but I've never had a serious arm injury. And a lot of it, you know, I think once they understand that we're not judging them by how many throws they make the day before or whatever, and they trust the system, it really works. Cause they'll text me in school and be like, hey coach, I'm probably definitely a yellow today. And I'm like, are you a red? And sometimes they'll be like, yeah, I'm a red. I just didn't want to tell you. Okay. Well, let's just shut it down. No big deal. You know? So we just take care of it that way. As far as pitch counts, we have pitch counts in our state. So I think April is 85 and then May is 95 and then playoffs is like 125 or something like that. So if I've got a kid that's big and strong and he's throwing, you know, 80% effort and we're winning 9-1 the whole day, I'm gonna let him hit his limit if he feels good. But if he's struggling all day and it's cold and it's windy, or he, you know, he's a little out of shape, or he didn't do his ramp up on his own coming into the season, then we're going to read him. We're probably going to look for a chance to get him out earlier, you know, because that'll also reinforce the importance of, hey, you need to do your work early in the season so you can max this out, because they'll get jealous of the kid that's out there throwing 85 or 95. You know, they're throwing 95 pitches and this guy's getting shut down at 65. Well, all of a sudden the next year, they're going to start throwing that ball a little earlier in the season, you know, and take it a little more seriously. So I think it benefits us two ways. It protects them, but it also encourages them to do it the right way the next time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And so even like, we've talked with some of our guys about even not taking in and out. I don't know if you guys do like a pregame.
Yep.
On the other field or not, but that was another one of, okay, if you're our starting pitcher and you're our third baseman or whatever it is, and you just threw 100 pitches yesterday, like let's maybe not do in and out today, like once a week or something like that. Or just trying to do that depending on how they feel. Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, we're just trying to be aware of how many guys.
I'll be adding that. We usually tell them they can just, you know, use their body and flip the ball across, but I like that better. I don't know. Let me ask you this. How many guys take you up on it?
Not many, but okay, it's like if you're really hanging, like if you're really hanging.
But I do like that option for him.
Sure. Yeah, for sure.
That's really good.
You know, it's things you pick up along the way, right?
Right.
So you guys, that's interesting that you guys have pitch limits per month. We don't. Like we start scrimmages February 15th. And, you know, I schedule as much turf around here as I can.
Right.
It's hit or miss how many we get. And then, but we can have, I mean, there's really like we do the 120, and then you have a certain amount of rest days depending on how many pitches that you throw. But you know, it's interesting. I've never heard about the months. I'm curious on like the research behind
whether or not that's. I'll send you a copy of the sheet. Yeah.
Yeah, please do. I'd love to be able to see that. But yeah, so let's talk about, you know, you sound like you're very competitive and you've done it long enough to where guys understand the routines and they know the expectations of what you guys are doing. So let's say, you know, you're going through a normal practice in the middle of the season. Like, what are you guys working on? What are you guys going through? Like, what are some of the things that you hit? Because like you and us, like we have Wednesdays off for sure. And we have Sundays off for sure in the middle of the season. And that's really about it. But I'd love to see how you guys win, you know, and there's some days we just, you know, we're like, man, we got six games this week, take the day off. Like,
yeah,
but absolutely. There's some days where it's like, we have three games or, you know, four, and we want to try and get, work on some different things, but I'd love to see how you guys win those midseason practices.
Well, we always determine, are we training or are we practicing, right? Training, we're developing another skill. Practicing, we're just reinforcing and improving a skill. So some days are going to be way more focused than other, because if you're training, it's like learning to walk. You better focus at it. But you could practice a skill and you can almost mentally check out between reps and check back in. But when you're training, you need to learn the entirety of the skill, right? The footwork, how your hips align, where your arm should be, what, you know, all that stuff. So like on those days, we're much more detailed. But once we're in season, and the kids, we don't talk a lot about this to the kids, but we don't try to train them 2 days in a row. We will train them and then practice, even if there's something I'm like, man, we really need to be better at this. We just won't do it, or it'll be so short, like we'll just reinforce it real quick and then kind of go move on to the next thing. We do a lot of things in very, very short spurts. Other than batting practice, you know, that there's no way to get around that quickly.
Sure.
But you know, we usually try to hit a minimum of five different things each training or practice, whether it's defenses, bunt defenses, base running, you know, communication, pop-up communication. We usually have some team oriented, then we go into like skill, like position specific. Usually they play two positions, so halfway through some of them flip, like my catcher will run out and take some reps at second, or he's got to get his PFPs off the mound. You know, so those situations kind of dictate how the practices go too, by what we have at each position. This year will be a little different because we have a talented sophomore group that's probably going to push some of our juniors and seniors. So we're going to practice a little more together so that if they do get called up or needed to come up, that they've been through everything they need to be through. So if something happens mid-season, they're ready. They're already used to what we're doing at the varsity level, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and honestly, that benefits us because my JV coach is phenomenal. He's a big catching guy and I'm not a great catching guy. So every day he's at practice with my catchers. I know my catchers are getting better. So it'll only make us better. We'll stagger it. So we'll probably do an hour of varsity defensive stuff, base running, whatever. We'll do like live BP together, and then they'll do their infield stuff together, and all the coaches will just hang around for the whole time to make it more beneficial for the kids.
Okay. That was the next question I was going to ask. How many players do you have in your program, and then how do you practice them? Because right now we've got, with basketball and wrestling guys, we've got about 32, which we'll have about 40 after those seasons are over. So just understanding we've got one big field and then we've got cages behind, but there's not a lot of space around us. So we've been trying to do a really good job of like utilizing space where we're at, because I don't want to practice them completely separate, because then you're here like forever. But also I think there's a lot of value in practicing them sometimes together, because then they get to see how the older guys do it. So absolutely, trying to balance that is not necessarily easy, but I'd love to hear like your process of how you guys go about what to do and when.
So sometimes, especially early, like the preseason, we'll bring, you know, two to four JV kids up for a day or two, and then we'll rotate the next two or four up, and the other ones will go back down. So everybody's been through it before the season starts. And then we have a field house that we get to use 2 to 3 times a year that we rent out. We'll go there, both teams. We carry, between the two teams, probably 35, 37, you know, depending on the year, with the JV numbers being much bigger. But we share space. Like you say, it is very tough to navigate, and like you don't want to be there all night. So we try to get the most reps. So if we're hitting in our gym, we literally have 3 L screens lined up across and a cage. And then on the back side of the cage is the tees. So they're not standing around, and we'll hit, like when we're inside, we will hit for an hour and 15 minutes before we go into our bullpens. Like, and it will just be swinging. And they'll, you know, there's little instruction here or there, but we try to rep it out when we're inside, and even our first couple weeks outside. And then once we feel like we're comfortable, we've got everything in, then we'll go back into like training smaller details, like breaking it down. But you know, sometimes it's tough because, like we said, both of us agree, everyone plays multiple positions. So you really got to teach, you know, the same skill like maybe 3 times, because your 1/3 baseman's an outfielder and he's a pitcher, but he's also your backup catcher, you know? So once you put the teams together, I think it can be more beneficial that way, because then you have sure. numbers at every position.
Right.
And, you know, I guess the other thing is we constantly, during our breaks, before we break or right when we come back, we check in, like, is there any questions on this drill? Everybody understand it. And if usually, you know, young males, they already know it anyway. So there isn't, and then something will go wrong, and then we get the opportunity to reteach it. But sometimes the kids will be like, yeah, I don't understand it. You know, and I think that's really beneficial, is when you get the kids that are just free to ask any question they want. Because then right. everyone wanted to ask it. They had the nerve to ask it, so now everyone's learning.
Right. Yeah. I love that, and I also – there are a few kids that I have to – that I have had to say, okay, if you have a question – and I pick a senior and I'm saying, you ask them first, and then they can say whether that's an appropriate question.
Yeah, we definitely have a couple of those too. I like that. Yeah. I don't know if I want to do that to my seniors though.
Yeah. Well, that's their fault.
But I do like it. That's good.
You know, heavy is the head that wears the crown, seniors. So if you want to be leaders, then there you go.
There you go. That's right.
Oh, that's good. So yeah. Is there anything else or different that you do for postseason? You guys have obviously found success. So you go through the season, you guys are, you know, healthy as can be. And then is there a break in between regular season and postseason?
No, not really. Yeah. We built in 2 or 3 years ago, we built in a league tournament. We've been taking on teams left and right in our league. So we built in an end of the season tournament, and I was kind of against it, but it's been great because the pressure in that gets you ready for the postseason. So you're playing like these really meaningful games right before you go into the postseason. The difference in our approach is we start kind of training less and just encouraging and practicing more. So we're not going to put in a ton of, we're not going to come in and put in 2 trick plays or anything like that going in the postseason, or we go with what we've had, because I always feel like if they're confident in what they know, they won't feel the pressure of the situation. But if they're unconfident, usually pressure comes from being lack of preparation, in my opinion, right? So if you're not prepared, you don't know what you're doing, you're nervous. But if it's just everything we've done and we're just reinforcing it, now it's in a fun manner, we're loose. I mean, we still hold them accountable. You got to get this many right before we move on. But it's we're not going to get all over them and yell at them and all that, right? We're going to be, as soon as we get to the postseason after the first game, we just become their biggest fans, really. You know, obviously, if they're not hustling, that's a whole different situation. But if you got guys that aren't hustling in the postseason, they probably shouldn't be on the team anyway. So,
right, and don't be late for the bus.
Yeah, right. I mean, we still have our standards, right? You can't be late for the bus. Sure. One of the things I've found has really helped us, I think it's more of a guesstimation, but we teach them to be really grateful heading into the postseason. So they have to pick a teacher and give them their alternate jersey, and they have to explain why they like them and why they had an impact on them face to face. And that has had such an impact on our players. Like, I just thought it was a cool idea. I didn't realize like how profound the effect would be on our players. But I feel like it relaxes them. It creates a school environment where our players are appreciated. But our teachers also feel really appreciated.
Right.
And like it's been really cool with that thing. I've got some really nice letters from our teachers. Like, I didn't even know this kid liked me.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, like, but then that teacher shows up, drives 3 hours to watch a state championship, you know, and the kid, like, we're getting ready for a state championship and my kids are picking out what teachers are in the crowd. And to me, that means we're ready. We're relaxed. We're not even paying attention to their IO. They're like, oh, Mr. Pearson's here. Oh, no way. You know, and that is just like really cool.
Right. Yeah, we did. So our football team does that, which is cool. I got picked one time, and I will tell you, it's like today's football jerseys are massively tight. And I was like, yeah, this is interesting. So, but with that, so what we do too along those lines, because I think it may have an impact somewhere, but we do a senior teacher first pitch on one of our games.
Oh, nice.
And so they get to teachers obviously get in free, and they get to come to the game. And as they're walking out with the person who picked them, they get to, you know, read on the loudspeaker why they chose this teacher and the impact that they had. And then they get to throw out the first pitch. The player signs it for them and gives it to them. And I thought it was cool.
That one too. That's great.
Oh, thanks. But I still all of my stuff.
Yeah, we all do. It's not stealing because we're all willing to give.
Right. True. I like that. I thought it was really cool, but then you like walk around and all of those teachers have their balls like in their one, any like their bookcases or stuff at school. And it is really neat because, you know, they take care of our guys a lot. I know that we have some teachers that are like the hammer athletes, but a lot of them want to see them succeed and they want to see, and it's really neat to be able to let them have that opportunity to share that moment with them, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, that takes it up another level. I like that.
Well, cool. Well, let me know how that goes for you if you guys decide to do that.
No, it's done. We decided.
Oh, cool. Cool. Nice. So I've got a couple quick hitters for you before you go. And, you know, before I do that, I just want to say thank you for hopping on. I know this, you know, middle of the day and it's December and we've got winter break coming up. And I'm thankful that you carved out some time to share so much with us. And we heard your bells, you know, so you even took, like, I'll tell the guests, you took a planning period or you took a personal leave just to be able to do this and share with us today. So thank you for that.
Well, but my pleasure, yeah, man. I look up to you. I listen to all your shows. They're fantastic. I just got onto them a couple months ago, right before we connected.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm about halfway through all of them now. University is working off really good.
Well, hopefully they've gotten better as I've gone along here.
Oh, they're fantastic. Well, I started from the back, from the end, and I'm working my way back.
Oh, okay. So we'll probably get worse as you go along.
Yeah. Actually, they might be. I don't know. I'll let you know. Sure.
No, that's funny. So with that, what is one drill that your players love that we can steal from you?
I've probably got a couple, but my personal opinion is our double play drill. Basically, we put 4 minutes on the clock and everybody plays a position. If you're an outfielder or not, you play an infield position with a minimum of two at every position. And then we just have two fungos going and we're just turning as many double plays as fast as possible. And some days we'll beat the clock. So if you know, like 4.3, it counts whether you bobble or not. Some days we play no bobbles. Some days there's no clock. And then we'll scramble it. We'll either try it again or we'll scramble them and let them pick another position. And that's always fun. You know, then you got some guys out of position trying it. But they compete. And, you know, we're not counting out loud. So they think they're counting in their head, but they don't know we have a coach judging it, a coach timing it, and then two coaches fungoing. And they love it. It just basically it goes 5-4-3. Let me think if I can recall it. 6-4-3, 1-6-3, 4-6-3, 1-2-3, and then 3-6-1, and then right back to the beginning. And after a couple of days, they get it. And I mean, our double plays have become so smooth over the last couple of years because of that drill. Because it's just they don't get time to think. It's just get rid of the ball, hit them in the chest, move on. Mm-hmm. You know, and So I think that's probably my favorite drill. I think it's a lot of kids' favorite drill.
Yeah, I like that.
We play a game of hustle ball. I don't know if you're aware of that. I'm sure everybody has a version of it. So basically, we split into two teams. Our catchers never come out of their shin guards. We have usually it's a coach throwing. Once in a while, if we have arms, we'll make it live. But with the coaches throwing, we can put the ball where we want. Our base runners get a free steal attempt every time. They get one free steal attempt. If they get thrown out, they have to go back. If there's somebody on first and the ball goes through the infield, you have to make every effort to get to third, especially if you touch second base before it hits the outfielder's glove. That's unacceptable if you don't run. Just to create more throws.
Sure.
Infield pop-ups are minus a run if there's a runner on. We have a ton of baseballs sitting on the mound. We have a bucket next to the catcher in case there's a take. We start with either a 1-1 count or a 2-1 count. If we don't, so there's a runner on third, less than two out, and we don't get them in, they lose a run. If they throw any equipment or leave equipment out, they lose a run. Bad body language, swearing, if that doesn't occur very often where I can hear it, but all those are either outs or minus a run. They have to learn how to organize their gloves with the person next to them in the dugout. So that there's 30 seconds between innings and 10 seconds between batters, no exceptions.
Okay.
So if you're not in the box, I'm throwing a pitch, and wherever the catcher catches, it's strike two. Mm-hmm. But it's quick. And then the loser usually has some sort of encouragement, whether it's running poles or just cleaning up the dugout or serving them a Gatorade. Or shaking their hand in school the next day in the hallway and tell them they're the best player they've ever come across in front of other people.
Oh, that's brutal.
Just little simple little things, but it's really fun for the kids. You get a lot of reps. You can set up situations so you can play every inning in a hit and run. You can play just to start the inning with a runner on third. Whatever situation you want to emphasize, you can either do it the entire inning or you can just start the inning with it.
Right.
So it's really fun. And if you have smaller teams, you can split the teams up into like teams of 3 to 5, as long as there's 8 or 9 guys on the field defensively. So okay. That's a really fun one.
Yeah. I like that a lot. One of the next ones is this goes back to, we'll start with this one first. What is something that you've learned lately that has made you a better coach?
Probably that culture beats strategy. That I would say, if you have a good culture and everyone buys and everyone believes, you can beat teams that are way better than you. Because they're so bought into each other and trust in the process that they just don't get fazed by the moments. Like I said before, we always say adversity is our advantage. Like, so when we're in a situation, we love it. And that's what, I say, that's what they say. And I think that plays a big thing. When you're young, you think, oh, I got to have 6 first and thirds and 5 bunt defenses and 4 pickoffs. Nah. What's the percentage of those things that come up? You're wasting all these times implementing them. They don't happen that often. Then when they do happen, you butcher it because it's only happened twice all year, So why not just have 1 bunt defense and 2 first and thirds and teach kids to just be competitive? I think that's the biggest thing I've learned is like your culture is more important than anything else.
Sure. And then finally, what is one thing that you've implemented in your program again, and you can add multiple, I won't take off points, but what is one thing that you've implemented in your program either early on or lately that's made the biggest impact?
That's a good one. I guess I'd say just self-awareness and personal responsibility, like making sure the kids understand it and do it on a daily basis, because it heads off a lot of the problems you're wasting a lot of the time on, like off the field, right? Because they fall under those two umbrellas. So instead of having to manage it before practice, a conversation, and halfway through the school day, because this kid is now failing, it just falls back to, did you take care of your responsibilities? because that's one of our standards. If you didn't, okay, don't come to practice. Let us know. Have the teacher write you a note when you're caught up. We'll see you then. And it puts it back on them. But it only takes a couple of times for them to buy in. And then we can all be more focused on the field, because in the back of their mind, like, coach is going to kill me. I'm failing. I haven't told them, you know, all the things that go through teenagers' minds. So just teaching them to have the responsibility for it, I think it not only helps us and me, but I think it helps them as like individuals. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. And so what does that conversation look like? So let's say, so I've got, you know, inevitably when you get freshmen in, there are expectations that they had not been placed on them before, right? Especially correct. In the classroom, being a student athlete. And so like one of the things we do, we make them, you know, do some conditioning as a punishment, you know, just mainly trying to change their behavior. Sometimes that works. Sometimes we will assign them study hall, or a lot of times we will assign them study hall. And then, you know, if it becomes a problem, then we make them sit out practice and go sit in the stands and do homework while they watch the rest of us practice, which sucks.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're trying to change their behavior. So what does the conversation look like for you? Like, let's say you've had a kid on the ineligible list for, let's say, 3 weeks. What does that conversation look like?
Well, I mean, each kid is different, but I would say one, it depends on the kid, but it really comes down to, what are they trying to accomplish? Like, do you want to be a kid that just plays baseball and not be good at anything else in your life? Because baseball is going to end between the ages of 18 and 25 for everyone, except for a rare few. So if that's the case, what's your plan when you're done? Right? Because if you're not taking care of your responsibilities, then we're talking about habit building. If you're not building the right habits, when you're 25, baseball is done, or 22 or whatever, you've built the wrong habits. Now you've got to make all these changes. So one, we're trying to teach you to build the right habits to be a more productive member of society, your team, your family. We say all the time to them, like, guys, like, if it doesn't impact you in 10 years, it shouldn't impact you majorly today, right? Know what impacts you as to what's just a passing moment. There's a big difference. We're very like you, but instead of calling it discipline, we call it encouragement. And instead of it being individual, the individual will do nothing, because the coaches had to take the time out of their day to talk to the teacher, the principal, the student, the parents, right? So that time affected how we could get ready for practice. So we're going to encourage you by you watching your teammates, we call them jump lunges or mm-hmm. run. Ugh. And you just sit there and they do it. And every time someone's late to school, the amount of time we do the jump lunges for doubles. So it goes from 1 minute. 1 minute's not a big deal, really. It's not. I'm out of shape and I could probably make a minute. 2 minutes is a gut check. 4 minutes is like torture. And it's not only torture for the guys that are doing the jump lunges, it's torture for the guy that's watching that created it. Oh, and we let them sit right in the middle in a chair in the gym while their friends are doing jump lunges for 4 minutes. And they turn into barely movements by about 2.5 minutes. And then he has to shake their hand and tell them why either he's apologizing or what he's going to do to change so that they don't have to do jump lunges anymore.
Ugh,
and usually... brutal. It is brutal. We haven't been past 4 minutes in probably 10 years.
Well, good.
Yeah. You know, because I'm telling you, after the 2 minute mark, those seniors get them in the locker room and I don't go in there. That's not my space. As long as it's clean, that's not my space. And I'm pretty sure they're encouraging them to either be on time or take care of their schoolwork. You know, so
I love it.
It kind of manages itself. I know it's not always super popular with the parents, but I will say it is extremely effective.
Right. I mean, it's
a lot. And that's of, what like we got to get to, right? As coaches, right. We've got to get to a point where we can coach our kids every day, not always be focused on the outside factors.
Right. And a lot of it is effort. Like, if we're being honest with high
school, that's all it is, right? That's all it is. Because I don't know about your school, but in our school, you can't be failing if you're sitting in class and giving an effort. You can be failing the class, but they can't make you ineligible.
Right.
So, like, when they become ineligible, they're really basically, they have to come tell us, I haven't done anything. Mm. I have not tried. Because if you're trying, the teacher will not put you on the ineligibility list.
Sure.
or they'll let us know, hey, like they're close, but you know, and we send out, we also send out a letter at the beginning of the season, as soon as the team is picked to all the teachers with their names on it. And we let them know our expectations of our players and that they should communicate anytime any of those aren't met, whether it's manners, timeliness, effort, or grades. Just shoot us an email and we'll encourage them. And, you know, some teachers, some teachers might take a little advantage of that. You know, oh, Johnny left and blew his nose twice today in class. But I'd rather know that he's leaving class a bunch of times and find out when he's ineligible. So I think that all pays dividends in the end. It's a little to police in the beginning, but it's definitely worth it.
No doubt. Well, Scott, I appreciate your time, man, and I want to give you the opportunity to talk through anything else that you'd like to say. So I'm going to mute myself, and is there anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners before you go?
I guess the only other thing I've learned recently is like that we just can't accept excuses as like leaders of young men, right? It's really an excuse is just really an admission that they didn't fail to prepare properly. That's what an excuse is. So we try to teach them up front, like if you take care of the preparation, we will always have a good competitive fun season. But they are young men, young boys. Sometimes they have to be reminded. But I think like we talked about culture before, one of the biggest things about culture is not allowing excuses, right? And then getting them to buy in the process over the wins, right? Wins are great in the newspaper, but I couldn't tell you most of the teams I've beaten are this, you know, like, but I can tell you the bus rides, the memories, the conversations, those things matter more. So as a young coach or any coach, when you realize that if you can build a good culture, you're going to have a good season. Wins or losses, really, usually it comes out, you come out on the winning end, but they don't become as important. I don't know if you know Coach Deggs, but, I listened to him a long time ago talk about being transformational, and that one really resonated with me. And that was probably what flipped me. It was making the change to be more of a transformational coach than I think he called a transactional coach.
Thank you so much for listening to Ahead of the Curve. If you would do us a huge favor, leave a rating or review wherever you are listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone and tag us on social media. That would help us so much with growing the show and helping others to stay ahead of the curve.